You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, hello and welcome to Evenings here on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and across the world. I'm Josh Parrish alongside Nick Dabano in studio, and we have one hell of a show for you tonight. We're going to kick things off with Keisuke Honda's first press conference since arriving in Australia. Some very interesting responses from him. Joey Lynch from Daily Football Show was down there at the press conference, so we're going to get on the blower to Joey and get an insight into the atmosphere surrounding Keisuke Honda's first media appearances. There were a lot of media in attendance. That guy can draw a crowd, Nick.
He really can, and good evening to you, Josh. It was a really interesting press conference today from Keisuke Honda. He's arrived, the man, the human, the anthropologist, the entrepreneur, the man of many talents. He's here. He's ready to really take over this league, and I'm really excited to see how he goes. Could be playing as soon as next Tuesday, so 6 days' time, he could be lining up in the FFA Cup against Apia. Nice little segue to start the show. Obviously, it's a nice little way for him to integrate himself into the Australian life. Obviously, he was almost retired not long ago, and he's decided to make the trip down to Melbourne and get his career underway. So, look, you know what? We wish him all the best. He was composed. He seems like he's already enjoying himself a little bit, and we'll see how he goes from here.
I think his English is a bit better than people give him credit
Definitely. I think people were a little bit sceptical when they heard the Adam Peacock interview and a little bit like
It's always harder when you're over video link. In person, it really comes across. And he can speak English. You just give him time and he'll settle in beautifully, I'm sure, assuming that he doesn't have to make regular trips to Cambodia to coach the national team.
Well, he might be doing it over Skype, according to some reports, but that depends what his role is, because even we can't sometimes comprehend it. But recently he came out on Twitter 2 hours ago and put it bluntly, really. He goes, "I always said to myself, when I try a new challenge, don't be afraid of failure." I think that just sums up Keisuke's last few months. Don't be afraid of failing in Australia. Don't be afraid of failing with Cambodia. He's here and he's looking to take the next step in his life. He's a very ambitious man, and we'll see how he goes from here.
I'm going to cover my room at home with inspirational Keisuke Honda quotes, I think. He's a man with some fortune cookie wisdom.
That, he really is.
Resonates with all of us. In other news, we're going to talk expansion, the hot topic in Australian football. Maurice Bassetto from the Western Melbourne Group is going to join us after their fan forum on Monday night. And earlier today, we spoke to Matt Windley, the head of the Team 11 bid, about their announcement that they will play the majority of their home games out of Casey Fields until that new boutique stadium is built.
Well, a beautiful 10,000 seat stadium down in Casey, obviously already used by the Melbourne Demons AFL Football Club, and they've done a fantastic job at maintaining the ground. It fits a lot of people. It's only really a one big grandstand on one side, but a lot of standing zone, as Matt said, give a bit of a spoiler. He said, you know, it'd be great for summer when you can crack open a beer and watch the game up on the hill, similar to a bit like Adelaide Oval in Adelaide, how they have that nice hill on that left-hand side of the screen. So I think, it's a nice decision to probably go and play out of Casey Fields. You can't really think anywhere else in the southeast where they could play regular games and draw big crowds, because other than that, they'd have to come into the CBD, potentially play at Amy Park. I don't think that sort of fits the sort of route they want to take. They want to stay and make it very tribal, as he said, in terms of what he wants to make out of where Team 11, whatever their team's going to be called at the end of the day. Potentially could be playing some games elsewhere. And it's a big, big catchment area. You're taking all the Gippsland area. You're taking all that southeast side of Victoria. It's theirs for the taking. And as he said, there is a whole lot of talent and a whole lot of football fans that are excited for this. And we'll see how he goes from here.
Absolutely. There's some really ambitious bids coming out, especially from the regional areas in Victoria. So we'll be, I suppose, Nick, pitting east against west this evening. And in the second hour, Mike Isles, the chief football writer from the Bolton News, is going to join us to talk about a huge story coming out of Bolton that Adam Lafond, I don't know if you pronounce his name quite so Frenchy.
It's like, is it Lafond? Is it Lafondra? I've always called it Lafondra because that's the English pronunciation we hear on here in EPL and Championship commentary.
I'm going with Lafond until proven otherwise. He is moving to Sydney FC. He will be the replacement for Bobo. That is all but confirmed, according to reports coming out of the UK. Mark Isles is going to join us to talk about how Lafondre has been going at his current club, Bolton Wanderers, why he's chosen to leave, and what we might expect from him in the A-League this season.
Well, those that are big EPL fans remember about 5 years ago, he was actually playing for Reading in the Premier League and scored about 12 goals in a season. Had a very nice run playing alongside Pavel Pogrebniak, the other big Russian striker, and they formed quite the partnership. And since then, he's really floated around the Football League, playing for sides like Bolton, played a season at Wigan on loan, played at Cardiff City. So he's really been everywhere, and now it looks like it's time for him to go. I was reading a bit on Twitter. A lot of Bolton fans are actually a bit disappointed to lose Adam Lafondre because they see him as quite a valuable championship striker, a bit of depth. And as we know, Josh, there are a whole lot of those championship strikers that are your championship strikers, not your Premier League. He fits in that same sort of bill as your Cameron Jeromes and your David Nugents, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see how he goes. It's a good signing for Sydney FC. They do need a striker. And look, he's a guy that's only 31 years old as well. He could definitely still put the ball in the back of the net.
Absolutely. Looking forward to hearing from Mark Isles on Adam Lafondre. And I understand, Nick, you've been across some breaking news coming out of Ghana.
I have. So what I've heard in the last 15 minutes or so, that Nigeria and Ghana are both facing international suspensions by FIFA after a final notice was issued on Tuesday over outside interference in their football associations. Does it sound familiar? Very familiar. Both countries could be suspended from international football if they fail to comply by FIFA's instructions by Monday. Sounds a bit like what's going on down here, Josh. I think that that's almost a sound warning to any listeners out there. If you're a bit worried about the Congress, FIFA are coming down hard on some of these nations. Australia, get your act together.
I think it's a little more serious in those countries. I believe the Nigerian government actually tried to suspend the football team. The president, Goodluck Jonathan, I believe his name is, tried to impose himself on matters a little bit more directly. But it does resonate and drive home the point that FIFA is not exactly malleable when it comes to their rules and regulations being applied. And if Australia doesn't get its act together on the Congress issue, we could be facing the very same penalties. So a bit of a word of warning coming out of Africa with regards to the action that FIFA could take against Ghana and Nigeria. Now, without further ado, let's hear from the man of the day, the man of the hour, Kasuke Honda, and what he had to say at his press conference. He was unveiled as a Melbourne Victory player today, his first press conference since touching down in Australia. Let's hear a little bit of what Kasuke Honda had to say.
I'm so glad that I can try new challenge in my career. I'm 32 years old. I was thinking to quit my career after the World Cup, but luckily this club offered me the great offer that's changed my mind, my career. So I appreciated that.
You had many decisions to make at the end of the World Cup. What attracted you to Melbourne and Melbourne Victory?
So, to be honest, I changed my mind after I spoke to Kevin directly, how he's determined the person, and he said to me he really wants to succeed as a club for not only the fans, for A League, and so he's an ambitious person. I'm an ambitious person as well, so I really inspired by him. I think that's a big meeting for me.
Kasuke Honda speaking at his press conference earlier today. And the man who was there that we have on the line right now, Joey Lynch from Daily Football Show. How are you, Joey?
I'm going well, thanks, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're great, Joey. What was the general vibe in the room? An international superstar touching down in Melbourne. Must have been a pretty exciting occasion.
It was. Well, the place was absolutely packed to the rafters. I think it's the most well-populated press conference that I've ever been involved in surrounding an A-League side. There were obviously a very heavy contingent of Japanese media there, lots of television cameras, photographers, and I dare say if that's the sort of media pack that's going to be following Honda around during the A-League season, the Victory might need to add a second press box because I can't see everybody fitting in that small 180 park as at the moment.
Definitely, Joey, definitely. And look, obviously the big news is that he could feature as soon as Tuesday night, I believe, in the FFA Cup. What did Kevin Muscat have to say about it? Was he very not straight to the point, sort of teared around it, didn't give too much away?
Yeah, he was non-committal. He said it's a possibility, of course. He did immediately pour cold water on the prospect of Honda playing tonight against the Bentley Greens in the friendly the Victory has. But there is the possibility it was played. Of course, Kevin Muscat, after the Perth Glory FFA Cup game, did come out and complain about playing at suburban grounds and the injury risk that is to players. He did leave a number of more high-profile Victory players out of that game. So he did say it was a possibility that Honda could play in the FFA Cup, but personally, I can't see it happening just quite yet.
Joey, Keisuke Honda really emphasised the connection he feels with Kevin Muscat and how influential Muscat was in actually persuading him to continue his football career. Those two seem to be pretty tight already.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin Muscat, he has developed a reputation as a player's coach since he took the reins at the Victory, of course, being a former player himself and a former captain of that club, a championship-winning captain of that club. He does really, at this point, live and breathe the Victory. And I wasn't really surprised to hear that it was Kevin Muscat himself that was involved in a lot of selling of the club to Honda, because as Honda did say during that press conference, he's an ambitious man, but Kevin Muscat's an ambitious man as well, and he liked that, and obviously he liked it well enough to sign on the dotted line, extend his club career, and come to the A-League.
Joey, talking about Honda's ambitions, we have heard the big news coming, especially out of Cambodia, about Keisuke Honda's position he's taken up. No one's really sure exactly what he's doing and in what sort of capacity. Was there any mention, any questions asked about his Cambodian sort of ambitions?
Yeah, well, I tried to nail Honda down a few times on that. The first time Kevin Muscat intervened and answered on Keisuke's behalf. And then the second time, I think Keisuke, he's obviously a lot more comfortable answering questions in Japanese, which he also did elaborate on the Cambodian response when it was asked of him by the Japanese press. Basically, from what I can tell, Kevin Muscat was very insistent that Keisuke is a Melbourne Victory player first, that he's a commitments with the Cambodian national side will not affect not even Melbourne Victory games, but even training sessions, Kevin Muscat said during the press conference. And that Keisuke was really concentrating on the Victory, and this was more of a background for the Cambodian gig. I think he's been named general manager to kind of circumnavigate the fact that he doesn't have the requisite coaching badges, and he'll be doing the Cambodian gig for free because the AFC has laws in place about accepting compensation from two different federations. So it was elaborated on when Keisuke was answering a question in Japanese. The translator mentioned that Keisuke will only be traveling to Cambodia once every 2 to 3 months. And I imagine those trips to Cambodia will probably coincide with the A-League's, for the first time, recognised international breaks.
Joey, just on that comment, I've been speaking to Dan Orlowitz today, who we spoke to on this show a couple of nights ago. I know you guys at Daily Football Show have spoken to as well, a Tokyo-based journalist, and he seemed to be of the opinion that the translator wasn't quite translating Honda directly when he said the 2 to 3 months comment. The translation I have from Dan is, it's rare that Cambodia play at the same time as Melbourne Victory, and during those times, my priority would be the Victory. The national team doesn't play every week. It's more like once every couple of months. So he hasn't really clarified as to how often he'll be going over to Cambodia and how much that will actually affect his time at the Victory.
Well, that's I'll have to take your word for it. Obviously, I'm not a Japanese speaker, so yeah. I was relying on the translator services. That is a very interesting point because, in that case, because Cambodia does have an international tournament coming up. I think it's called the Suzuki Cup, which we'll be playing in November. When I was looking at that, Cambodia have been drawn in the group stage, and they believe I have four group games taking place in November, only one of which I believe actually falls within the, two of which fall within the international breaks, one of which is on the last day of that international break. So Cambodia is scheduled to play on November 8, 12, 20 and 24. The A-League is scheduled to break between November 12 and 20, and the Victory themselves are scheduled to play on November 11 and 25. So that is going to raise a number of questions about just if he's needed at that, if he's going to be on the bench for that, how important he will be. It is that he has a presence at those Cambodian games, because theoretically, should Cambodia progress from the group stage at the Suzuki Cup and make it all the way to the final, the second leg of that final isn't until December 15. So it could be quite a lengthy campaign for Cambodia if they play well in that tournament.
Joey, just switching our attention to on the field, I believe Kevin Musker didn't give too much away about where Honda's going to be best utilised, but where do you see Honda playing his football, will be playing out wide as number 10 or even potentially used as some sort of false nine?
To be honest, I kind of think he's going to play all of those positions at some point during the season. He is of a level of quality that is very rarely seen at an A-League level. His skill and touch on the ball and his ability to affect games from out wide in the middle is probably it's a level that very few players in the A-League have ever reached. So Kevin Muscat himself said during the press conferences that the Victory have an attacking mindset, but what Keske's arrival at the club means is that he's got a lot more flexibility going forward. So I kind of seen there might be occasions where, as Keske's looking to adjust to playing in 35-degree days down at Skilled Stadium or at Amy Park in January weather, that he might get hidden out in certain positions or asked to do less. But there are other times, of course, when maybe Victory are chasing games or really trying to make a statement, that he'll be played in a more attacking and more ball-dominant role. So I imagine he'll play a number of roles during the season.
Joey, just in your opinion, is Honda the kind of name who will bring in more attention and bigger crowds to the A-League? I know he will draw a lot of interest from Asia, and we saw that with the packed-out press conference today, but do you think he's a big enough name amongst maybe the casual Australian football fan that people are going to want to come out and see him specifically?
That's probably the million-dollar question when it comes down to it, just how we are to measure what constitutes a success for Keske Honda signing this marquee deal, the Foxtel-funded marquee contract. Of course, as you said, he's going to bring a lot of attention to the A-League from Asian markets, and with the announcements recently that A-League games will be shown on ESPN via their new digital on-demand service, the presence of a name like Honda for the American market. Of course, he did play in the Mexican League last year, so he probably will carry a lot of name recognition amongst the Latino audience in America. Will be worth its weight in gold. The big question is, will the fans, I guess, at Amy Park and Marvel Stadium come out to see him? We have seen crowds when Japanese sides have visited during the Asian Champions League haven't been best, and those were for more one-off appearances. So it's going to be a very interesting question. Of course, he did play for AC Milan, so there is a connection there with followers of Serie A. Do they come out to try to see Honda? But at the end of the day, I think the biggest question will be, is he performing on the field? Mm. If he's just come along and it's obvious that he's distracted, maybe he's distracted with his charitable gigs and distracted with the Cambodian coaching or general manager or whatever we're calling it, and he's not playing at his best, he probably will not move the needle beyond the initial stages because people will become disillusioned with his presence. But if he comes in and plays the way that he is capable of, he has the chance to really move the needle for the A-League, I think.
Joey, it's a really exciting signing with many fascinating subplots to go along with it. But thank you very much for coming on the show tonight.
No, thanks for having me, boys.
Joey Lynch from Daily Football Show, who was in attendance at Keisuke Honda's first press conference as a Melbourne Victory player. Nick, this Cambodian story is just not going away, is it?
It really won't until we entirely know exactly what he's doing. I think that that's when we will sort of have some sort of clarity and we'll drop the topic. Look, I'd like to know, because I think being someone, obviously, an avid follower of the A-League, you want to know what the marquee man of the season is going to be doing in his side job.
If he's more of a figurehead, if he's an ambassador, if he's a general strategy person, then that's fine. I think he can probably juggle that. If he's head coaching the team by proxy over Skype, that's a huge distraction.
Of course.
He's going to give the A-League his full attention if he wants to succeed. As many foreigners with big names have proved coming down here time and again, it's not the easiest league to succeed in. It comes with unique challenges in terms of travel,
weather.
In terms of weather, and in terms of the physicality and pace of the league as well. It's not as if it's some Mickey Mouse competition. So if this does impinge upon his A-League career, it remains to be seen, but I think that would be a real shame.
Just touching on a point that Joey made about drawing crowds, about Keisuke Honda touched on about the Serie A sort of dynamic. I've spoken to a few of my friends who are Serie A fans, Milan fans, Juventus fans, etc. They're really excited to see him. I think that that's going to be a general pull to come and watch him play, because I think I haven't seen that sort of excitement since Alessandro Del Piero, David Villa, when there was like, okay, got to get to the games because you're going to get to see this guy play. It doesn't even matter if your team's playing or not, if you semi-follow him or you're an avid follower. I remember not even being a Melbourne City fan, but going along to watch David Villa play against the Newcastle Jets on a Sunday, which David Villa was playing in. I think it was one of his only pure home games. And it was a great spectacle because it was like, okay, you're going to watch one of the best players that's coming to this league just do what he does best on the pitch. So I think a lot of typical football fans will be there in their colours to go watch this man play.
I agree. I think if he scores one spectacular goal in his first five games, then Honda coming to town is an event and it will kick off straight away. It all depends on his performances on the field.
Definitely, definitely. And just touching on the Melbourne Victory, they have announced their starting 11 for the game tonight against the Bentley Greens. So Matt Acton in goals, Stormaru, Corey Brown, Thomas Deng and Lee Broxham all among the back four. Terry Antonis, Carl Valeri and James Troisi, with Barbaros jying him out wide and King Kenny Atu leading the line. Big game for the Victory, obviously, just to get some more minutes in the legs heading into their FFA Cup clash against Apia next week. So, no Keisuke, and that was definitely true.
Obviously.
Wonder if he'll be down at Kingston Heath tonight. I think he might be a bit incognito, I think, if he was to get down there, because I don't think that he'd definitely see that blonde hair from a mile away, and there'll be people rushing to him from all angles.
We'll see if John Anastasiadis can loan him a beanie to cover up his identity. But Nick, definitely. We must take a short break. On the other side, Morris Bassetto from Western Melbourne Group will join us to discuss their fan forum that they held on Monday and the plans for the team going forward. This is Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio. Back soon.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR. Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Evenings here on FNR Football Nation Radio. It's Nick DiBarno and Josh Parrish in the studio today. It's 6:30 and it's been a fantastic show so far, Josh. We spoke to Joey Lynch of the Daily Football Show, giving us a nice little wrap-up of the press conference and the unveiling of Keisuke Honda this afternoon. A brilliant acquisition for the A-League and for Melbourne Victory, along with some other big news happening around the world, including some bans potentially happening over in Africa, which might serve as a bit of a warning to the FFA Congress.
We've got excitement, we've got drama. Every time I hear about Keisuke Honda, I just lick in my lips about seeing him in the A-League. And another exciting development out of the west of Melbourne is, of course, the Western Melbourne Group's A-League bid. They held their fan forum on Monday night. The community in the Wyndham and West Melbourne area coming out in force to see what they had to say. And we've got Morris Bassetto on the line. How are you, Morris?
Good, thanks, Josh. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thanks so much for coming on, mate. We know you're a busy man and you've been down to business with the Western Melbourne Group this week. Tell us, what was the atmosphere like in the room? What was it like to see the enthusiasm of the local community?
Oh, look, it was really positive on Monday night. We had over 100 people there interested in what we had to present and asking questions, and the overall theme was really, really positive.
It's a great sign to hear there, Morris. So obviously in terms of the Western Melbourne group, what sort of questions were thrown up? Was it more questions just based around stadia, kits, et cetera, et cetera?
Look, that was definitely the main two themes were around colours, strip, name, and badge. But also there was quite a bit of time spent on the stadium and the facilities. So, they were the two really key themes. A few people asked about elite pathways. The two key themes were definitely stadia and team and kit.
Morris, speaking of elite pathways, something that caught my eye was if the club signs players from the local clubs in the area, you said the Western Melbourne group will put a plan in place to compensate them.
Yeah, look, it's one of the things we've been working with in terms of our own internal financial model, and that is to help grassroots football and the community clubs reinvest in their own coaching and their own programs by, through some sort of financial compensation for children that trial and get selected in our youth academies, which we intend to have similar to the current A-League teams and FFA requirements.
Morris, in terms of playing out of a certain stadium, obviously, if the bid is to be successful, the stadium that is being proposed obviously would take some time to be developed. In the meantime, though, is there any plans potentially to play out of an existing stadium? Is GMHBA Stadium down in Geelong probably the primary location for most of these games?
Yeah, look, we're in discussions at the moment with the Cadinia Park Trust and in terms of playing our interim games at Cadinia Park as well as Amy Park. So nothing's sort of been finalised there, but we're in sort of deep discussions and have been for a little while. So, those will crystallise, upon receiving an A-League licence, we'll start to crystallise some of those commercial arrangements.
Morris, what exactly is the catchment area for the bid? How far does it extend into regional areas and so forth? Are you aiming to engage people further out, or is it just the West Melbourne suburbs primarily?
Well, we see the catchment as the western region, which covers metro and regional. So, anything this side of the West Cape Bridge all the way through to Geelong and up, including, Ballarat and Bendigo potentially as our catchment. And obviously we're not going to say no to anyone that want to be part of the Western Melbourne group.
Talking about that catchment area, Morris, is there any plans to potentially play some friendlies or even some games out in those regional areas, potentially in Ballarat or even in Bendigo, if the licence is to be successful?
Yeah, look, absolutely. As part of our sort of pre-season and launching the club, we'll be playing all of our trial and practice games across the community facilities in the West, across the West, and trying to engage as much as we can with our community partners and try and, really from the ground up develop our sort of fan and community base.
Morris, there is something I'd like to give you the opportunity to clarify. I read some stuff coming out on Twitter that the bid wasn't really interested or wasn't modelled and financially prepared to enter a potential, this is of course a hypothetical second division, and the club the bid would only stack up if it would enter the first division straight away.
Yeah, look, I saw some of those Twitter feeds and no doubt that everything was taken out of context. The question was asked about whether we'd be interested in applying for a spot in the second division. Well, reality is there isn't a second division and there isn't any spots being offered for a second division. So at the moment, the FFA are asking for bids for an A-League licence and that's what we're doing. Having said that, and the translation to promotion and relegation, which is sort of the next topic for discussion, I'm a football person. I grew up with football and our bid's about football first and foremost. Any football person would understand that the football pyramid and promotion and relegation is fundamental. That's in the lifeblood of football people and football clubs and the football community. So, I'm certainly a supporter of promotion and relegation. Because I'm a football person and so are the rest of the football people that are part of the Western Melbourne group bid.
So, Morris, so just to make it clear, the fact that the Western Melbourne Group isn't prepared to enter a potential second division does not mean that the bid team is opposed to the idea of promotion and relegation in principle.
Well, it isn't prepared. I'm not sure that's the right question, Josh, because there isn't an opportunity to join a second division as of today.
A hypothetical second division.
Yeah, well, hypothetically, joining a second division would be very, very difficult. If you also wanted to build your own 15,000-seat stadium, yeah, it doesn't. You know, the economic sense isn't quite there. But certainly, the opportunity to join the A League and be successful in an A League license allows a world class football facility to be built, which is going to be to the benefit of the game across the country, and certainly for the West of Melbourne. So. You know, we can talk about a hypothetical, but that opportunity is not there to join the second division and then subsequently fight for promotion into the A-League. So, you know, it's a bit of a moot point, but if we join the A-League and promotion and relegation gets in, then we'll deal with that at the time that happens. But that's, again, that's not in our control, and we'll just have to cross that bridge when we get to it.
Morris, thank you so much for coming on Evenings on FNR. I really appreciate you telling us about the fan forum and clearing that issue up as well.
Okay, no worries, Josh.
Morris Bassetto, head of the Western Melbourne Group bid, joining us here on Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio. Nick, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we spoke to Matt Windley earlier today from Team 11, and we're going to play that pre-record after the break here on Evenings on FNR.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Evenings here on FNR, Football Nation Radio, the 24/7 football-only station that never sleeps. I'm Josh Parrish alongside Nick Tabano, and expansion of the A-League is the order of the day on today's show. Earlier, we caught up with Matty Windley from Team 11 after they announced where their temporary home would be before their proposed boutique stadium is built. Thanks for joining us, Matty. Team 11 has confirmed their temporary home until the boutique stadium is to be built, and it's right in the heart of Casey.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, mate. Look, in an ideal world, clearly, we would love to be playing from day one in a brand new stadium, right next door to Dandenong Train Station. Because if we are successfully admitted into the A-League, it will be because we have been, granted funding for that stadium. So it's a chicken and egg thing. We won't be getting into the A-League without that stadium, to make that clear. So in the interim, obviously, it doesn't get built overnight. It's sort of estimated at about a two-year build time, roughly. So for at least the first season, and obviously we'd have to see, depending on what happens with that second season. But, yeah, we wanted to play as many of our games as humanly possible in the southeast, and really the best venue is Casey Field. It's an oval, yes, but that's not necessarily foreign to some A-League clubs around, and that's just the reality of Victoria, obviously being an AFL stronghold. But it is well equipped to handle professional sport. It hosts Melbourne Demons AFL preseason matches, AFL women's matches, VFL matches throughout the year, and City of Casey have been exceptionally accommodating in making sure that that ground is going to be absolutely up to speed for us at Team 11 when we come into the A-League, hopefully next October, and it'll host the majority of our games. Look, we've said, as we said in our media release today, that just for pure safety and logistical reasons, given the amount of people that would hopefully come to those derby games, that we may have to look, to one of the city's bigger grounds to accommodate those games, but that's not sort of confirmed yet. Other than that, every other game will be held in the southeast of Victoria, with the most of those being at Casey Fields.
Matt, it's Nick here, and was it really a no-brainer to stay at Casey Fields, obviously being the biggest ground in the southeast of Victoria?
Yeah, absolutely it was, because, most of our potential fans, we've done obviously a lot of consumer research and just a lot of anecdotal research too through my work going out to local clubs all the time. One of the biggest prohibitors for them in terms of engaging, fully with your Melbourne Victories and your Melbourne Cities is distance to the city. And I often use the anecdote of, you know, one of the last games I covered for the Herald Sun was that derby on a Friday night in March. And it took me an hour and a half to get from Berwick, very close to Casey Fields, to the city. So there's just so many people that are in that absolute same boat. So, you know, Casey Fields obviously being central to Dandenong, to your Frankstons, your Mornington's, and even your South Gippslands and Latrobe Valleys of the world. To keep it in the southeast and create a real carnival atmosphere. Again, it's a lot of standing room around. We're exploring the potential of, you know, of temporary seating and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, I'm thinking it'll be a really cool thing on a nice warm summer's evening, you know, standing on the hill with a beer, you know, watching the team go around in a 10,000 capacity venue and a la, you know, what Melbourne Victory had to do 2005-06-07. Obviously starting at Olympic Park, which was such a small capacity at the time, you know, burst it to the seams and then you know, hop straight into Dandenong Stadium when that's ready, hopefully sometime season two, or at least at the latest, the start of season three.
Matty, you mentioned temporary stands there. Is there any way in which Team 11 can customise this footy ground to make it more palatable for the football fans?
Wouldn't have thought so. Probably wouldn't want to get people thinking about that, only because obviously we will be in a venue sharing arrangement with obviously the Melbourne Footy Club, who are a tenant already there with those, you know, AFL women's matches and VFL matches, as I say. So obviously you've got to protect the turf. But, you know, I was there just last night. We just had a fantastic night at Casey Fields last night, which was driven entirely by so many local clubs in the region getting together as a real sort of show of support and a bit of brainstorm of ideas that they can do. We had more than 200 people in the room from about 30, 35 clubs come together, and I sort of was looking at it a little bit differently last night, sort of picturing what it would be like having, you know, an A-League and W-League game there in the middle of the pitch. And the sight lines are really good. You know, it's a really intimate sort of venue. It's not a massive footy ground, obviously, like MCG style. And obviously, you know, let's use the example of Etihad. You know, if you're not... If you're sitting, you know, right back in the top of the top tier, you're obviously a long way away from the pitch. But given that it's sort of, you know, mostly standing room around the ground, you're clearly still going to be close to the pitch, and so the sight lines actually aren't too bad. So, yeah, definitely wouldn't be putting seats on the pitch unless there's a dramatic change of heart. You know, I'd be sort of, yeah, conditioning people to think that it is going to be in that obviously oval configuration.
Matty, also, you spoke about just going back to playing most of the games in Casey. You said the majority will be there, but there are going to be some games elsewhere. Is the possibility to play games in potentially regional Victoria in places like Gippsland? They have some nice grounds down in Moe and also Morwell.
They do. They absolutely do. So, yeah, look, that's what we're saying at the moment, that the majority of the games are going to be at Casey Fields, but watch this space. I've made absolutely no secret of the fact that, you know, Gippsland for me is an exceptionally important part of this bid. Spent a lot of time there, down there engaging with clubs in Gippsland. You know, it was with at the Morwell Falcons 2000, as they're called now, just the other day with Don DeFabrizio, the godfather of that club when they were back in the NSL, and their current president, Tony Salvatore, and they've been fantastic supporters of this bid. And just last night we had, yeah, clubs coming from as far and wide as Moe and Monash and Trafalgar to the gathering of clubs at Casey Fields. So, read between the lines there in terms of what's going on, but we're obviously in a position to be able to confirm that we're going to be using Casey Fields and watch this space going forward in terms of other announcements, I suppose, in the near future.
Matty, we haven't checked in with you and Team 11 in a little while. Can you give us an insight into where the process is at with regards to the bid? I noticed you've signed on Paul Wade as an ambassador.
Yeah, Paul, I would have loved to have got on as an ambassador sort of really early on, but just conscious of the fact that he lives in Sydney, so it's a little bit harder. But he grew up in the heart of our region. He grew up in Hallam. He went to school in Dandenong with Teresa Dees, another one of our ambassadors. The school that he went to is all of a 2K walk from the stadium. He's really passionate about the southeast. You know, he played for Doveton. That's where he started when he moved to when his family moved from England when he was, about a 10 or 11-year-old, played for Dandenong City, one of our proudest clubs in the region as well, before obviously, you know, carving out an amazing career at club level, you know, predominantly for South Melbourne and also at international level for the Socceroos. So, he's really, really pumped to be helping us out in an ambassadorial sense. And then, with his line of work that he does too nowadays, you know, with some real inspirational speaking tours in schools and local clubs and businesses. He obviously does that a lot in Sydney, but, you know, that works in well with a lot of the stuff that we are going to be looking to be doing in terms of betterment of the community. And we've got some pretty exciting announcements to come in the next couple of weeks in terms of the scope of this bid beyond sport. And someone like Paul with his inspirational story sort of fits into the mantra of what we're trying to do there too. And obviously the added bonus of the fact that he is a South East boy and really passionate about bringing this bid and this team out to our region. So, yeah, that was obviously an announcement that we made. Clearly, we are still at this point in time a council-led and backed bid. And as we've said all along, it's clearly going to transition out to being a privately backed entity. And obviously, that August 31 deadline is looming, so you can expect some announcements in that space too. Obviously, we've already been pretty public in saying that Jerry Ryan of Jayco Caravans, and is no stranger to the A-League, is going to be our major shareholder. But, you know, we're going to be pretty excited about other people that we'll be announcing coming on board in the next couple of weeks as well.
Maddie, before we let you go, for those listening from that part of town, the southeast of Victoria, are there any events coming up for them to get involved in and any at some of the local clubs around?
There is, actually. I probably can't say, unfortunately, that there'll be stuff coming out in the next couple of days, which is pretty cool, which I've caught wind of in the last 24 hours, which has been sort of driven by the local clubs. It's been the really cool thing, nights like last night, whereby, a lot of our local clubs are sort of driving a lot of, support, content, events themselves to back this bid, and it's sort of a bit of affirmation for the bid team, obviously, and myself personally, who's invested a lot into making sure that we're sort of building this bid side by side with the local community clubs. I've made I've been unashamed sort of in my approach in terms of making sure that this bid, looks after and is, as I say, side by side with our grassroots clubs because they're the captive audience. We've said that we've got, a stadium coming in the realm of 15 to 20,000. Well, we've got more than 23,000 registered players in the southeast of Victoria. If we can get every one of them along to the game, we don't need to appeal to anyone else. So let's give a team, let's give them a team. Sorry, to call their own, get really tribal about, and deliver on a really passionate sort of fan base for the local community here, and they're obviously seeing the virtues in that and are driving it for us as well in terms of promotion and support, which has been really heartening to hear and see.
Tantalising, Maddie. We'll keep a close eye on those announcements in the next few days. Thank you very much for joining us here on Evenings on FNR, and best of luck with the bid process going forward.
Anytime, boys. Have a good night.
Matt Winley, the man himself from We Are Team 11, the project manager, giving us a nice little wrap-up of everything that's been going on down in the southeast of Victoria. They've confirmed they will play games out of Casey Fields if the bid is to be successful, with potentially some games heading a bit regional. It's good signs, though, down for We Are Team 11 and their push towards the A-League licence, and really promising signs that they've confirmed that they've got a ready-made stadium ready to go and ready to be at their disposal. They've made great partnerships already with the clubs around the southeast part of Victoria. And even as I said before, potentially mentioning a move down to play a couple games in the Gippsland region. Obviously, Moe and Morwell both have some fantastic grounds at their disposal.
Yeah, a sensible plan, I think, from Team 11. Obviously, these stadiums take a while to get built. I just can't wait until football has its own stadiums at its disposal, these boutique arenas. I love seeing the architectural mock-ups, but if we actually have them in reality, it makes fantastic away trips for the city-based fans. And for the home teams, it's just wonderful atmosphere and a space to see their side play.
How awesome does the We Are Team 11 stadium look, by the way?
Oh, it looks fantastic.
Like, I think the idea of that it's made by the same architects as Amy Park, because that same sort of outside design, but I think that it's about, I think that they're expecting about 15,000. It's not a big capacity, but it has that sort of Bournemouth feel, very close and very electric. I think the atmosphere will be great because of just apparently the way the roof is made. There's always new innovation. I'm not an architect, so I wouldn't know too much about how noise works and keeping the sound in, making it sound amazing. But I think what they've got there is a fantastic building blocks for what would be a brilliant boutique stadium, which we need more of. Down in that Dandenong region, there's plenty of land to build around, and especially near the Dandenong station, it's exciting that we could be seeing a third A-League team potentially come down here to Melbourne, or potentially four, even four if in the next bit. If, you know, South Melbourne get in, if Western Melbourne get in, we could have two Victorian teams joining City and Victory.
It would be incredible for football in this region. Obviously, with those stadium designs, you want as steep a gradient as possible, you know, so the fans feel like they're on top of the pitch and it keeps the noise in. I believe the West Melbourne proposed stadiums has some similar acoustic effects to try and heighten the atmosphere. I just hope that by the time these stadiums go up, whichever bids get in, that active support is treated with a little bit more maturity and respect in Australian
football. Safe standing areas.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that there is actually some atmosphere in which to keep in the grounds with
and
the acoustics.
You need to, because I think that what makes the A-League experience as such, when you go to an A-League game, you want to be part of and immerse yourself in what is a fantastic, you know, as I said, an experience to go to these games. When we were a few years ago, a bit younger, we used to go to those games where the active support was at its peak. Obviously, the Northern Terrace, the RBB, the Cove, they were rocking. They were fantastic in how they, you know, you see on TV, you're at the games and it's electric. The season when Kevin Muscat first won the A-League title with Melbourne Victory, that 2014-2015 season, almost every game Melbourne Victory played at Amy Park was sold out. They were playing the Perth Glory. I remember we went one game and it was a 1-1 draw on a Saturday night, packed. Wellington Phoenix, packed. That is what we want to see more of. That is what a guy like KSK Honda will allow for more Victory fans and more neutrals to get down to. And this opening up of a few bays, it's a start that Melbourne Victory have done. We need to see more of it, because I think you bring that into it, you allow for much better atmospheres. And the last few years, A-League games have lost that edge of, you know, really getting involved and getting excited. And, you know, just you get chills thinking about how good it is being part of it. And we saw at the grand final this year, that brilliant setup in the corner there Victory had, the away fans. Like, you love the away fans at games, because it's like your little segregated corner, even at Amy Park when Victory's played the Wanderers, and you'd see the Wanderers all in that little corner, but they would be making so much noise. And that is what we want to see, very similar to what we see overseas, especially in England.
It's what makes our sport unique, is that supporter culture. And it's a great marketing tool. Let's not forget the commercial realities of it. There's a reason why you see roaring crowds on every Fox Sports ad, or when they're selling the Premier League rights overseas as well. They use the fans as marketing tools all the time, because you want it to feel like an occasion. You want the TV audience to feel like they want to be there.
Yeah.
And that's what draws people through the gates, the fact that it's a different experience being there in person.
Well, let's be real about every other sport, major sport here in Australia compared to football. You don't get the same experience from anywhere else. You go to the AFL, you go to the NRL, you go to the cricket.
Yeah, there's some great atmospheres.
Some great atmospheres.
They're reacting to what's happening on the field rather than it's in the moment, you know, crowd reactions, rather than the coordinated chanting that's, you know, a bit. Well, and the humour as well, it's different at football.
You look at, you know, when you compare at an AFL game, it's more you celebrate the constant goals. Obviously, there's a lot of goals in the game of AFL, but in football, it's that nervous build-up you're with and among everyone, and it's almost that feeling of relief scoring the goal. And that's what a lot of people have asked me, especially when I was younger, asking, why do you love the game so much? And I'd say, well, think about it like this. You know, you're on edge for so long. When it's a nil-nil game, it's a big game, and you finally score in around the 60th minute. You know, you so many chances. You're getting that nervous engine, and finally you score. The crowd erupts. Everyone's getting around each other, and that's one of the great parts about this game. And that excitement of being with your mates or your fellow fans, your comrades, if I want to use a bit of Marxist terminology, but, you know, look, it's an experience though. Like, you go to these games for the experience. That's what football allows us to do, because when there's nothing happening, you could still chant, you could still make songs, you could still have a bit of fun. That's what the whole A-League thing is. The Victory have a whole playbook full of songs ready to go at your disposal.
Well, enough backslapping about our code, Nick. We better take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of A-League off-season news, a little bit of championship. There's plenty of football being played. There was some League Cup this morning over in England. All that coming up after the break here on Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7 here in Australia and all around the world. You are listening to Evenings here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Nick Tabano and Josh Parrish in the studio. A loaded show so far in the first hour. We're now in the second half. It's 7:05 and great show so far. Joey Lynch giving us a nice summary of the KSK Honda press conference this morning. Morris Bassetto from the Western Melbourne Group giving us a bit of a wrap-up of the fan forum from Monday night, and also we spoke to Matt Winley Just elaborate a little bit more on their press release saying they'll be playing games out of Casey Fields for the first couple seasons if their A-League bid is to be successful for We Are Team 11.
And if you've missed any of the show so far, check up on our SoundCloud. Those interviews will be posted shortly after the show finishes.
Definitely. And if you want to have your say about any of the topics that were raised a little bit earlier, expansion, Honda, anything that's getting up your grill about the A-League or anything abroad, make sure you give us a call on 99 44 99 99 at the 03 at the front. If you are outside of Victoria, or 61 if you're outside of Australia, or tweet us at FNR_radio. Join the discussion at any time. But Josh, we must now turn our attention to some of the transfers that are happening here in the A-League. One of the big news that are coming straight out of England, actually, is that potentially Ross McCormack, a man who played half a season at Melbourne City last year, brilliant impression he left on the A-League after a fantastic stint, scored just over, I think, 15 goals. He's potentially having his contract terminated at Aston Villa. Steve Bruce has asked for it for him to be released after, you know, not being able to get a move during the transfer window. Melbourne City interested in his services to bring him back to the A-League. What do you make of this?
It'd be interesting to see Ross McCormack and Bruno Fornaroli in the same lineup, wouldn't it? McCormack, he didn't contribute all that much in open play, but he was so good
from a dead ball,
and his finishing was very consistent. He ended up having a fantastic goal return from his time here. His free kicks are obviously lethal from the penalty spot as well. And when you get a cross into his feet, he can finish it pretty unerringly into the corner. So it'd be a great pickup for Melbourne City, and already proven that he can do it in the A-League.
Definitely. And look, you know, Ross McCormack and as well, I believe Micah Richards are the two guys from Aston Villa who are set to be released, a former England international, Micah Richards as well. But talking a bit about McCormack, 16 games, 14 goals for Melbourne City last season. As you said, if you can form some sort of partnership with Bruno Fornaroli, watch out A-League defenders, because this will be an incredible partnership. We haven't seen the A-League for quite some time, having them to lead the line for Melbourne City. It would probably require a bit of a different structure from Warren Joyce. Might have to go to a three at the back and potentially play a five in midfield, or he might have to go to some sort of, maybe McCormack plays more as a centre forward, a bit more of a second striker, allow for him to use that creative ability. But as you said, Josh, in open play, he's a bit of a non-factor.
They did play a little bit of 4-4-2 at times last season. Help me out here, the left-back Jamison. Scott Jamison put it out as a at a halftime interview. He said they were playing 4-4-2 false nines with Vidicic and Budzinski. Maybe they could play a traditional 4-4-2, which isn't foreign to Warren Joyce, of course, coming from English football. But one move that actually has gone through and has been completed today, it was rumoured to be completed much earlier in the transfer window, but it's finally gone through. Aidan O'Neill, the young Australian midfielder from Burnley, has completed a loan move back to Central Coast Mariners.
Good
sign. In the A-League. Fantastic pickup for Central Coast. Very talented young player, only 20 years old. He hasn't played many senior games for Burnley, just the three appearances in the league. But Oldham Athletic, Fleetwood Town, loan spells, played 21 games last season for Fleetwood Town. I think he could be a really great pickup in midfield for the Mariners.
Well, we know how well-stocked Australia are when it comes to holding midfielders, and this is another one that's coming through under the age of 20. As you mentioned, Josh spent all of last season at Fleetwood Town, played quite a bit of football, 21 games, one goal. He has already pledged his future to the Socceroos as well. He had interest to go play for Ireland, which is just shows he's a bit of hot property, Mr. O'Neill. But he'll come to the Mariners. He'll probably slot right in alongside Tom Hiarie in the middle of the park and have the link up with Usain Bolt if it all is to come to fruition. But look, it's a very good signing for the Mariners, I believe. They've made some good moves with Jordan Murray and Josh McDonald adding to their striker depth, along with having a guy like the Wizard of Woi Woi, Matt Simon. And, you know, it would allow for them probably to play some sort of 4-2-3-1 if they wanted to push McGlinchey into a number 10. But I think O'Neill coming in and playing as a holding midfielder, he'll probably bring something to the A-League we haven't seen in terms of another young talent coming in and playing that deeper role, probably playing a bit more defensive. He could even get forward. I haven't watched too much of O'Neill, but what I've heard, he's very promising, and he might be a bit of a smoky if he gets into a bit of form to potentially push towards maybe the Socceroos squad after the Asian Cup. I think the Asian Cup is a bit of a push, but as we know, Milay Jednak and Mark Milligan are potentially on the outer, so it does open up two spots, especially one in the middle of the park. So O'Neill could be one of the favourites, along with maybe a Brillante or an O'Neill, to take one of those positions.
He will obviously add a lot of grunt and bite in midfield. Playing in League One is not an easy task.
Not easy.
Physically, especially for a young player who, you know, isn't the tallest. So he's obviously had to learn his trade in a pretty tough environment. Burnley is still on the books, and if they see something in him, if Sean Dyche sees something in him enough to keep him around, at least on their books officially, then he's obviously a hard-working player because Sean Dyche wouldn't tolerate anything else. Otherwise, you're straight out the door. Another pickup that I want to talk about with you, Nick, is Ben Halloran coming to Adelaide
yes.
United. Looking a little different than we last saw him.
Well, I remember him 4 years ago being the baby-faced winger of the Socceroos.
Looks fresh-faced like, blonde choir boy.
Yeah, he looks like now he has spent 4 years in the wilderness, in the German forest, in the Black Forest over there, and been living among the bears and everything else going over there. But
he's certainly matured.
He certainly has. But look, this is a guy that, as I said, 4 years ago was in the Socceroos World Cup squad. He has ability. We have seen it, but it's a matter of him getting on the field. He's played a lot of football for Fortuna Dusseldorf. He went over and played for Heidenheim in the second division, and he scored 6 goals in 56 games, went to Nagasaki in the J-League. Now he gets a chance to reinvent himself. And we know that Australia don't have a real plethora of attacking options, so he's a guy to definitely keep in mind. If he could get himself into some form, he formed quite a nice partnership with Craig Goodwin on either wing for the Adelaide United, something that definitely Marco Kurz will be licking his lips about, having two Socceroos, really, if you want to still put Halloran in that same sort of bracket, because he is a capped Socceroo, on either wing, and having a guy like a big Baba Diawara through the middle. It's quite a nice front three that Adelaide United have going into the new season.
And don't forget Ken Ilso as well, kind of playing as a second striker, attacking
definitely,
midfielder.
Yeah.
That's a dangerous attacking lineup. And obviously they struggled to score goals last season. They struggled to find a permanent solution to their striking problem as well. So having a little bit more pace on the wings, obviously they had the outlet with Johan Absalonsson.
Do you see him being a straight swap almost for him, or is that more for Craig Goodwin?
I suspect Craig Goodwin will play on that left-hand side and Ben Halloran on the right, but they can potentially switch flanks. And Ben Halloran, you said it yourself, he was a fringe Socceroo not too long ago. He went to the 2014 World Cup and saw something in him, and he's got pace to burn. He's a very dangerous player. He's played a lot of football in Bundesliga 2, which is a good level. So I'm sure he'll make a good impact on the A-League this season.
And let's not forget Mirko Boland, their other signing, did score in his first game in the FFA Cup, another deep-lying midfielder. And they've got a very good range of depth up top. They've still got Nikola Milojusnić, who was a brilliant winger last season. I thought showed some fantastic glimpses.
Inconsistent,
but at his best. Remember, he's still very young. So I think giving him a bit more time off the bench definitely could be a player. And obviously Ryan Kiddo as well, who is very serviceable. He's a bit, another one, inconsistent. But
he's quick, he's fit.
He can give you something.
Yeah, he's a physical player. So they've got options now. They didn't have too many options.
Yeah.
They had to play a lot of young players last season, which was great to see, of course, but sometimes it was out of sheer, you know, injury troubles and lack of depth.
I'm sure Marco Kurz would love to have a full team at his disposal this year. And more of his players, I think, adding a bit more of his taste on Adelaide United, starting to filter out some of the older bodies under previous managers, Gia Moores, Adelaide United.
Yeah.
But he's got guys as well like Postolos Stamatopoulos,
Stamatopoulos.
Stamatopoulos, yes. He's a real mouthful to really say that one, a big Apo. But he's a guy as well. It's another young striker they've got. And they've also got, you know, George Blackwood, a very talented young Australian striker who there's a lot of hopes about George Blackwood potentially coming into his own and being one of the future Socceroo strikers in the years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Mirko Boland there, who looks like a quality acquisition from the limited amount we've seen so far. He looks like a good replacement for Daniel Adlung.
So we spoke to Paul Williams last week, I think it was, or maybe the week before, and he told us about Lee Chong-Yong. He's been released from his contract by Crystal Palace and potentially is on the radar of some A-League clubs. Do you think that maybe one of the ACL teams might be looking at him in particular due to maybe not just the ACL teams, but maybe obviously a Newcastle Jets or a Melbourne Victory? Geez, that'd be another good signing again, Lee Chong-Yong or Sydney FC even, to come in and potentially fill one of those spots. As we do know, Asian teams, Asian players don't fit under the criteria of playing as an international player, and it allows for an extra player on their squad list. Does Lee Chong-Yong fit the bill as a player to come into play for one of these sides?
Without a doubt. He was Paul Williams' top recommendation as the Asian player that A-League teams should be looking at, and now he's available. He's a fantastic player, real talent.
Only 30?
Only 30 years old, perfect time for an A-League club to sweep for him. It depends whether Sydney are going to bring in Adam Lafondre, who we'll talk about shortly, as their marquee, or whether he'll fit under the cap.
And we'll talk to a little bit later about Lee Chong-Yong, former Bolton player, played over 176 games for Bolton. Maybe we'll get a bit of a gauge to see about Lee, because obviously spending 6 years at Bolton Wanderers, I remember watching him in the Prem back before Bolton first got relegated. Very talented winger, went to Crystal Palace, didn't really get the opportunities over the past couple seasons. But what we have seen from Lee, he's a very quick winger, he's very creative, and definitely a guy that I think, especially Sydney, who obviously they haven't, like, Bihadja comes in, you know, to replace Mijajewski, but if they can get Lee Chong-Yong to properly replace Adrian Mijajewski on one wing with maybe Ninkovic on the other, you have Danny De Silva in there as well. That's
Lafondre up top. That's a forward line.
You've got yourself set up for another title defence. So that is a team that I think definitely should be looking at him first. I don't think
a minor premiership defence. Let's get it
minor
right.
Minor premiership defence. Yes. Just trying to give Sydney FC a little more celebrate. But in terms of, you know, Lee, I think, if Melbourne Victory to sign him would be a bit outrageous, if they could fit him under the cap, I think he'd be asking for a bit too much. But he's a guy that, you know, look, he's an interesting one for Victory. Imagine if they could get him in, because it would allow for almost KSK Honda to play as that false nine, and you could have Lee and Barbarossa on one wing and James Troisi is a 10, and that's just me dreaming. But just imagine that. Just if you want to talk football fantasies for Melbourne Victory fans, it's just to get them even more excited than what they already are. Lee Chong-Yong comes into the left or right-hand side, and you've got those guys around him. That's almost unstoppable.
Nick, you've been playing too much Football Manager. You're getting caught up in fantasy football.
Josh, my Football Manager my crowning moment was a few years ago when Wigan were in the championship, winning the Europa League.
I gave
him
an excuse.
Yep. So I think that I can dream, and I think if Lee was to come over to Melbourne Victory, it'd be a great signing. But even maybe Melbourne City could be looking at Lee to replace Daniel Arzani.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of teams that'd be looking at him, and even the Jets, who haven't signed anybody just yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Newcastle as well in the Asian Champions League, we shouldn't forget. But Nick, we shall take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the League Cup results that rolled in this morning, including one incredible upset, a League Two team beating a Championship team. All that after the break.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Evenings here on FNR, Football Nation Radio, where we are streaming football 24/7. I'm Josh Parrish alongside Nick D'Urbano in studio this evening. And it's time to have a look at the League Cup results from this morning, Nick. The headline of which was Exeter City knocking out Ipswich Town. That's right, Exeter City from League 2 knocking out mid-table championship side Ipswich Town on penalties. Magic of the Cup, Nick.
Really is the magic of the Cup. We don't talk about the Carabao Cup and magic of the Cup usually connotes with another league, but there is this time around. We've seen Bradford City a few years ago have a similar sort of run. Maybe Exeter are going to channel their inner Bradford and go for a bit of a run. But Ipswich, worrying times for them to say the least after Mick McCarthy got sacked. A lot of people calling for his head. New manager comes in from Shrewsbury, and the season hasn't been all so good for them after two games. But for Exeter, 2-2 in a nice win over Ipswich Town to get the ball rolling. And what a way to do it on penalty shootouts.
And yeah, Exeter have lost their manager as well. Paul Tisdale going over to the dark side.
Is that the Yeezys?
Milton Keynes. Yes, Paul Tisdale of Yeezy fame. He's a he's a very fashion-conscious manager. So he's departed Exeter City after a number of years in charge.
It was 12 years, I believe. But something similar to that, yeah.
Hasn't affected them so far. They've knocked out championship opposition 4-2 in the penalty shootout. In this competition, the format is that it goes straight to penalties on 90 minutes. So
there's no stuffing around here.
Yeah, no stuffing around. I believe that's to do with they used to have extra time in this competition, but clubs would rest players because they didn't want their first teamers to play 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And this change has come in so that it's less of a burden for these teams, because you look at the EFL clubs, some of the competitions they have to play in, there's the
Johnston's Trophy,
Trophy, I think it changed sponsors.
Checker Trade or something.
Yeah, I think it's a Checker Trade Trophy. There's the FA Cup. There's the League Cup. There's
46 game season.
It's an unbelievable workload on these players.
Or if you're in the unlucky case, you know, if you're a relegated Premier League side that manages to win the FA Cup, you have to play European football as well, which we've seen Birmingham and Wigan do in the past. Nottingham Forest had won penalties 10-9 this morning against Bury. An incredible game. They were down 1-0 early. Owen O'Connell scored in the second minute. Their goalkeeper, Jordan Smith, was sent off on the 33rd minute, but it was Matty Cash in the 93rd minute to send the game to penalties, and they end up coming away 10-9 victors. Macclesfield Town knocked off Bradford City, one of the other semi-upsets, to say the least. The League 2 side knocking off a League 1 side on penalties. Middlesbrough, very close to the edge, taking on one of the promotion favourites in League 2 in Notts County. A 3-3 draw in normal time, but 4-3 in the end on penalties. So a nice result for Middlesbrough as they look to continue their okay start to the season. They're undefeated in their first three games in the league and continue with a win in the AFL Cup.
Yeah, a fantastic effort from Notts County to push that all the way to penalties. And what a game, 3-3. I think we're burying the lead here, though, Nick, because your boys, Wigan Athletic, went down 3-1 to one of the worst sides in the championship, Rotherham. Well, what happened, mate?
Well, I didn't watch the game personally. I saw the starting 11 when I woke up this morning, and I already saw they were resting a lot of players. Don't want to make too many excuses. But I think they made 10 changes from the team that drew against Aston Villa on the weekend. Still had nine changes. Statistically, we dominated them. 13 shots to 8, but then simple as that. Well, Paul Cook said after the game, one team took their chances, the other simply didn't. And kudos to Rotherham. Wigan have this tendency, they don't seem to play well in the Carabao Cup. I think that's about 4 or 5 years in a row where they've failed to get past the first stage, but it seems like the FA Cup is sort of their thing, you know. It seems like they just have this thing about the Carabao Cup. But anyways, I don't think that they were taking it too seriously if they rested some players. Rotherham a bit more under pressure, I think, after their first two games, and obviously one of the favourites to go down, but Wigan will brush themselves off and look to get themselves going again in the meantime.
And in Aussie news, Jackson Irvine started for Hull City against Sheffield United. They drew but won 5-4 on penalties away from
Fantastic.
Home. So congratulations to Jackson Irvine, who was not called upon in the penalty shootout. Apparently, his teammates had it all covered. They didn't miss a kick. So well done to Jackson Irvine, who progresses to the next round.
And Mile Jednak's Aston Villa got a 1-0 win on the road against Yeovil Town. Mile did not feature at all, wasn't even on the bench, being rested. He did play on the weekend, his first game after returning from injury. But the Villains are through after Connor Hurrian scored the goal in the 77th minute to send them through against the gallant Yeovil Town. But a nice win as well for Marcelo Bielsa's men. Leeds United 2-1 over Bolton Wanderers, and we'll be talking about Bolton a little bit after the break. But good result for Leeds United, especially Paddy Bamford scored a brilliant goal in 27 minutes to get the ball rolling. But Leeds are playing some fantastic football to start the season. And Bamford, well, he's a guy with a lot of ability. We haven't really seen it in quite some time, considering when he first burst onto the stage all those years ago, went to Middlesbrough, didn't really get himself going. But now potentially a chance to reinvigorate himself under a newly formed Leeds United, who are just looking fantastic. But then again, they started brilliant last season, but they got a certain man in the helm who's an accomplished manager, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. Leeds United are playing some beautiful football. Too much for Bolton this morning. But after the break, we will be speaking to Mark Isles, the chief football writer for the Bolton News. Nick, out of this weekend's championship fixtures, is there anything that that catches your eye, that you're really looking forward to seeing some of these teams in action this weekend?
Well, just having a quick gaze over some of these games, it's an interesting matchup. A few very interesting games. Obviously, there are some midweek games as well. But just looking at some of the games this week, Leeds versus Rotherham, I think, could be a big win for Leeds at home. I'm a bit worried for Rotherham. They're going to be a bit of a high after their win. I think that definitely,
Aston Villa Ipswich could be an interesting one, because Ipswich Town, I'm calling it now, I think they're going down this season.
You reckon they're going down?
I think Mick McCarthy, he should have been kept on. He was doing an incredible job with meagre resources, and the fans never appreciated him for some reason. I don't know whether it's his dour temperament or what have you. Also, West Brom taking on Maslongo's QPR at home.
QPR need to get a result eventually.
And West Brom need to prove that they're one of the premier sides in this division, because they did lose on the opening day of the season, and
they bounced back a little bit.
They did bounce back. They won 4-3 against Norwich City, but they've still got so much of the talent that served them well in the Premier League. So surely they should be aiming for promotion.
Well, the primetime games, to say the least, Birmingham versus Swansea kicks off the round on Saturday morning at 4:45 a.m. And also Preston versus Stoke City at 2:30 a.m. is the primetime game on Sunday morning. And then the next night, Brentford City, your mob, take on Sheffield Wednesday, who are not necessarily starting the season too well. Whilst my mob, we can take on Nottingham Forest in the 12 a.m. game. That's going to be another big game for the Latics, but also for Nottingham Forest, who have got a bit of investment coming their way. And as we said, scrape past Bury this morning. So a lot of exciting championship games, to say the least. And also Millwall versus Derby, I reckon, has a bit of a flavour at the Den. Obviously, Derby want to bounce back after getting hammered by Leeds the other morning. And
it's never easy to go to Millwall.
Exactly.
And it's always a pretty hostile atmosphere.
Not just for the fans, but actually for the players. I've always found, even when I've actually watched a lot of games at Millwall, it's almost impossible for a team to get a win. But Stoke City as well will be looking for their first win of the season against Preston. They haven't been able to get off to the start of the season they'd be hoping for. And also bottom-placed Reading have a big game against Bolton Wanderers this weekend at the Majeski Stadium.
Well, Nick, we must take a short break because on the other side, we will be talking Bolton with Mark Isles, the chief football writer for the Bolton News. We're going to ask him about Adam Lafondra, who's on his way to Sydney FC from Bolton, as well as Lee Chung Young, a former Bolton player who's just been made a free agent. It could be a target for some A-League clubs.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR. Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Evenings here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and across the world. I'm Josh Parrish alongside Nick DiBarno in studio this evening. Now we're going to head over to the UK, Nick, where Mark Isles, the chief football writer for the Bolton News, joins us to discuss Sydney FC's new signing, Adam Lafondra from Bolton. He's been granted a release from his contract. He's heading over to Australia, according to all reports in the UK. Very exciting signing for Sydney. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
No problem at all, folks.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on, mate. We really appreciate you making the time. Tell us a little bit about Adam Lafondra. What is he like as a striker? What style of play? And how successful has he been in his career recently?
He's a penalty box poacher. You know, you don't get too many of them nowadays. These strikers that just exist to sort of come alive in the penalty box and sniff out chances. And a bit of an old-fashioned type, I think. You know, he doesn't hold the ball up or run the channels too much, but if you can get the ball into the right areas for him, he just guarantees goals. He's got that sort of bravado and confidence that strikers need to have, unshakable confidence, really. Arrogance, bordering on the arrogance, but he is a terrific asset to have. I mean, he's been more of an impact player, I think, for Bolton, throwing him on off the bench perhaps more than starting. But I know that's a bit of a frustration for him. He feels he can contribute more for that. I think if you can get a team playing around him well enough, if you can get wide players getting the ball into the penalty box, then I think his record shows that even at the highest level in the Premier League, he's capable of scoring goals.
Mike, it's Nick here, and I believe Adam Lafondra was playing this weekend against Bristol City. How quick did this move eventuate? Was it something that was touted during the winter transfer window? Summer transfer window over in England, but that he was going to get the move over to another club, or did it just really rapidly happen over the last couple of days?
Well, I think the Sydney thing materialised on Monday, by all accounts. He's gone into the manager's office on Monday and said, listen, I've been given this chance to go over a three-year contract, which is great for a 31-year-old. Obviously, it's a fantastic offer for him. And can I leave? But I think it'd be naive to suggest that that's the first that anybody would have heard of it, or indeed the first anybody would have heard that Adam Lafondra wanted to leave at Bolton, because I think, you know, there were a couple of stories over the summer that suggested that maybe he saw that he wasn't going to get enough game time at Bolton this season. A couple of strikers that the manager wanted here that maybe would have been ahead of him in the whole pecking order. He spent half the season on the bench last year and was a bit frustrated when they sold their main striker, Gary Medine, to Cardiff City for £6 million. He came in and did a fantastic job at the end of the season, saw them over the line, got them to safety in the Championship and scored a very important goal on the last day of the season as well against Nottingham Forest. So I think he feels he can do more, and I think he would have been looking around for the right option, and obviously Sydney is the right one for him.
Mark, judging by the manager's comments in your piece, Phil Parkinson, Lafondre seems like a pretty model pro. It's not as if he was some enfant terrible, you know, wanting to move away and refusing to come to training or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's always kind of shown his frustration in not playing, but only in the right way, if you know what I mean. I think he when he comes back into the team and scores a goal, he'll always say, "Well, I told you so." Well, you know, if you put me in the team, I'll score your goals. He's that kind of player. You'll hear quite a lot of that from him. He backed himself to the hilt 100%. But I think that on the training ground, as you mentioned there, Phil Parkinson has always been extremely pleased with the way that he's applied himself, and so did sort of Neil Lennon before that. And I think every manager he's worked with has said that he's worked really hard on the training pitch to kind of perfect that part of his game. I know he works so hard on his shooting drills and making sure he's razor sharp. And as I say, if you give him the ball in the right areas, he will guarantee you goals.
Mark, also another player that's linked to a move to the A-League is the recently released Lee Chong-Yong, a former Bolton player and formerly of Crystal Palace. What can you tell us about Lee for those that haven't seen too much about him? Obviously, he played a lot of football over 6 years down at the Horwich Club. Mm.
No, I mean, Chongi, fantastic lad, such a tireless worker. Technically one of the best players. I've covered Bolton for nigh on 15 years now, and he's technically one of the best players I've seen. Terrific in possession, very rarely gives the ball away. But unfortunately, he made a bad career choice and went over to Crystal Palace from Bolton at a time where he wasn't really guaranteed football. And that has ended up costing him. And I know Bolton Wanderers really wanted to take him back earlier in the summer until Korea did poorly at the World Cup, which meant their FIFA ranking was gone and that the UK work permit laws prohibited the move. So now he's looking for an option, and I know Australia is something that does appeal to him. He wants a decent standard of football. He's looked at Belgium, he's looked at Turkey as maybe an option to stay in Europe. But I think, you know, if indeed he does come over there, he's a terrific player, and he's still got plenty to give time-wise, and he's a good age.
Mark, what was that nickname for Lee Chong-Yong again? That was brilliant.
Chungi. Oh, Chungi.
Fantastic. He's a cult hero then.
Yeah, absolutely. He scored a goal for Bolton in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup against Birmingham City, last-minute header. Which just cemented his place, really. I think he'll always be very, very fondly remembered at Bolton. But he had a lot of highs and lows. He broke his leg at Bolton. Really, really bad double break of his leg in pre-season at Newport one time. Battled back from that to become, you know, a multi-million pound player and earn his move back to the Premier League. Really very, very sad that it didn't work out for him at Crystal Palace and he didn't get enough football. But I genuinely do think he's got a lot to give.
What's the state Bolton are in at the moment? We've heard some stories down here about them in financial troubles and so forth over the last few years. Obviously, we don't follow them nearly as closely as you do, but is the club in a healthy state at the moment?
I think it's starting to stabilise. I think they had a couple of years where it was very touch and go. They had an owner that was trying to sell the club, didn't want to put any more funds in, so things kind of ground to a halt. When the new ownership came in, there was a lot of disturbance, a lot of inherited debts that I don't think they really knew a great deal about, so that caused problems in itself. There have been issues with high ports and taxes and things like that, which, you know, you, as a football writer, you don't really want to find yourself writing about, but I seem to have spent the last couple of years as a financial journalist rather than a football journalist. You know, I need to get an accountancy degree or something, because I think it would have come in handy. But I think just in the last 6 months or so, we've seen signs that, you know, things are starting to stabilise. They've rationalised everything, got the wages down and starting to cut the cloth accordingly as such. And hopefully, fingers crossed, I won't need that accountancy degree.
Mark, also, it's been obviously looking at Bolton's business over the off-season, a lot of turnover, but a lot of free transfers. Not many players coming in for much of a fund. I believe only it was Josh McGinnis for £200,000. And a lot of players like Jem Karachan, Carl Henry, Aaron Wilbraham, Darren Prattley, Jan Kirchhoff were all moved on. How is the team stabilising in terms of on the field? Is it looking better this season compared to previous years? Of course, an incredible win on the first game of the season, and not so much a good performance this morning. It's a very good Leeds United, I must say, this in the Carabao Cup.
Yeah, Leeds look like they're going to be a top side this season. And it was a bit strange last night because it was, you know, both teams put out effectively a second string side and a lot of changes made. But no, I think man for man, Bolton are better this season. They've actually managed to bring the wage bill down, which is quite crazy, really, by releasing certain players that were on wages, you know, virtually Premier League wages. So, you know, they managed to improve their squad and still managed to trim their costs, which is credit to the ownership, I think. They've done a good job on that front. You do need quality in some areas, and there's a lot of fans maybe looking at the fact that Lafondra has gone and saying, you know, well, okay, well, where's the goals going to come from? There's probably a big question to be answered rather there up front for Bolton. They're going to have to put their hand in the pocket and find, you know, a striker to replace Alfie's goals. But I think that generally speaking, it's slightly more optimistic for this season.
Mark, I want to touch on one of the new signings coming in on loan, Yannick Voldschut. Actually, surprisingly enough to know, I'm actually a Wigan Athletic fan and I watched a bit of Yannick for the two seasons he was there. Very powerful winger, a very direct winger, and also can rip a shot from range. Scored a goal already this season, but a fantastic signing to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he lost his way a little bit at Norwich. Obviously got a great big money move there from Wigan. But he's so highly regarded at Wigan. We knew if he got a chance at Bolton, if Bolton got a chance to sign him, they'd be buying a very, very good player. But such incredible power and pace. He's a little bit rusty at the moment. I think probably the lack of games or the sort of the milling around he did during the summer waiting for a move has maybe affected him slightly. So I think what Bolton have got to do is trying to get him up to speed and get him ready and match sharp again. But I think if they can do that, they really do have a top quality championship player who can, as you say, can score goals. But that frightening power and pace is exactly what Bolton want from the wide men. They rely very heavily on the sort of the counter-attack. So Wiltshire sums it up perfectly, really.
Mark, just one last one before we let you go. Mark Milligan, obviously a Socceroos international, has been linked with Bolton time and time again. As recently as July, the move seemed to be back on. Some work permit issues involved. Is that one dead in the water? Is Mark Milligan never going to wear a Bolton Wanderers shirt, or is there still a chance?
I'd say it's unlikely at the minute. As you say, it seems to have been on and off. His representatives have kept in touch with Bolton very, very close last summer to happening. But again, you know, a bit like Chung Yong Lee, the UK work permit laws haven't done Bolton too many favours, and you're kind of left to the fortunes of how the national team is doing and how, you know, far they're doing in World Cup qualifying, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been a bit disappointing. I know Phil Parkinson was very disappointed when they just missed out on signing Milligan last summer. So he did think he was going to be a decent sign, and I think if memory serves, he went for Carl Henry instead. At the moment, I think the way that things are going, they're bringing down the average age at Bolton. I think it's unlikely now to get resurrected.
One final question before we let you go, Mark. A big game against Reading this weekend on the road. How do you see this one going? Obviously, Reading still without a point from their first two games.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting to see how Reading will have changed from the last time we were there. It was only a few weeks before the end of the season, and they were managed by Jaap Stam at the time. They were passing for passing's sake. They had no direction. Very, very poor team. If not the poorest team, I think Bolton came across last season. And that's saying something because Bolton were a poor team this season. But, you know, Reading, you know, they've changed a few things around in the summer. Maybe a bit more purpose, a bit more direction, but still the results haven't come. And it's a funny atmosphere, I think, when you go to Reading as well. It's quite an easy crowd to turn. So if Bolton can start the game well, as they have, certainly at West Brom on the opening day of the season, I think there's points to be gained there, and it would be a terrific start to the season if Bolton can get two wins and a draw out of the first three games.
Well, Mark, we must thank you very much for joining us tonight here on Evenings on FNR, and I'm sure we'll speak to you again soon.
No problem at all, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Isles, a fantastic football writer over from Bolton.
Yes, he's chief football writer for the Bolton News. He gave us a lot there, a lot of detail,
yeah.
A lot of analysis. He's really on top of things. And my favourite part has got to be Chungi.
The nickname
for Lee Chung Young, which certainly, if I have anything to do with it, will catch on if he moves to the A-League.
Yeah, definitely. And look, you know what? He summed it up well. Adam Lafondra comes over. He knows how to score goals. I remember watching him in the Prem about 5 years ago at Reading. Knows how to put the ball in the back of the net. He's a goal poacher, exactly what Sydney would need. And if they do go after Chungi and they have him and Chungi up there with Ninkovic and also Danny De Silva, that will be a very solid attacking front four for Sydney. And I'm sure he'll get a lot of service, exactly what he'd be looking for.
An interesting detail in Mark's article was that Adam Lafondra has reportedly been offered a 3-year contract, which in the A-League is almost
unheard of,
especially for a foreign player. So we could be seeing him in the A-League for quite some time to come. And at the age of only 31, it seems like a great piece of business from Sydney.
Steve Corica must see something in him to take him forward. Obviously, they had Babo for 2 years. Babo was a bit older. Obviously, don't get me wrong, fantastic striker, but
clinical finisher.
Definitely.
Penalty box player.
He's looking for exactly that. But Babo does boast a little bit more height than Lafondra, but Lafondra is an accomplished player over in England.
And he's good in the air for his size, right?
Exactly. And he's a very hard worker, which I think any coach, if you have a hardworking striker, is almost the perfect recipe for success.
And someone who backs himself as well, as Mark alluded to. We've got to take a short break, Nick. We'll wrap the show after this. This is Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, welcome back for the final time to Evenings here on FNR, Football Nation Radio, where we stream football 24/7. And Josh Parrish alongside Nick Dabano. And Nick, there's something I want to draw to your attention. We've been speaking about the EFL Championship, League 1, League 2, some of the transfers between the EFL and the A-League that are potentially going through. Adam Lafondra, Sydney's new striker, is all but confirmed according to reports in
just
the UK.
Just waiting for Sydney to confirm it.
Yes, he's reportedly been offered a 3-year deal and will sign on the dotted line very shortly after being released from Bolton. And before the break, we spoke to Mark Isles, the chief football writer at the Bolton News, who confirmed that news for us and talked up what a great penalty box striker Adam Lafondra is. But there's a club I want to mention. I feel like they deserve a shout out on this show, and that's Barnsley.
The League One Barnsley.
League One Barnsley, who sent a personalised letter to one of their fans, one of their most passionate fans who travels with the team and is very vocal in support of them on social media. And they, Barnsley have a close partnership with the mental health charity Mind.
Yep.
And they sent a personalised letter after noticing that this fan was expressing a lot of negative thoughts on social media and speaking about his depression. And they sent a supportive letter totally out of the blue.
Yep.
To tell him that the club was there for him, that the chief executive officer's door is always open if he wanted to talk about anything. Thanked him for supporting the club through so many years and let him know about this charity Mind, who are an EFL partner, a partner with Barnsley, and there to support people in need. So an absolute class gesture from the club.
Absolutely. And I think that in this day and age, there is more awareness about mental health and more awareness about spreading. Obviously, you got to, it's such a topic that we've got to address, especially in the realms of not just in football, but in the world. And they're taking the correct measures to help this guy, who obviously is a passionate football fan, who does need someone just to have a word with. Like, obviously, the CEO, fantastic gesture for him to say, look, you know what, mate, if you need to have a chat, by all means, just come into the club. They're prepared to help him out, offering him the charity of Mind. And if we could see more of that, especially throughout sport in Australia, if there is something similar going on, by all means, make sure that, you know, you do talk to someone about it. It's such a topic, especially with what we've seen with Australian men as well, something that is...
You need to destigmatise.
There is a massive stigma. And obviously for anyone, if you need to get in a chat, obviously the lifeline number 131114, obviously available to talk at any time, or obviously contact Beyond Blue at any stage as well. And they'll be able to help you out with any of your ongoing needs if you're feeling down at any time.
That's when you know a football club is deeply ingrained in the community. When they're there for that kind of support, that's absolutely phenomenal. And I really credit to Barnsley Football Club and everybody involved. They do have a match coming up this weekend in League One against one of my boys, AFC Wimbledon.
Big
AFC Wimbledon fan. But honestly, after that, I don't really mind who wins that game because Barnsley, favourites for promotion this season out of League One, obviously run their business in a fantastic manner. And AFC Wimbledon, well, there's been so much chopping and changing this season with players going out the door.
I think the two heartwarming stories, I think you both wanted to see them get promoted.
Yeah, maybe a draw is the fairest result, but yeah. AFC Wimbledon, no chance of promotion this season. They did get a win over Portsmouth in the League Cup today. I don't expect them to do anything in that game.
We'll see how they go when that game comes along this weekend. But Josh, just going through some of our fantastic guests we've had on the show today. We started off with Joey Lynch, who was at the KSK Honda unveiling this morning at Amy Park. He's here. He's getting ready to go. The anthropologist, the man and the human. I love reading his Twitter bio. It's just it warms the heart. A really interesting, you know, sort of unveiling. Not too much said about where he's going to play, but in terms of what Melbourne Victory have done, he feels inspired by what Kevin Muscat's message is. To get him to come out of what was going to be retirement at a very young age and pursue outside interests. But it's a good sign to see that Melbourne Victory were able to convince one of the greatest ever Asian football players, one of the greatest ever dead ball specialists of all time of world football, to come and play here in the A-League. Still in the age of 32 years of age.
It's absolutely phenomenal. He could play as soon as next week in the FFA Cup.
Wow.
When Victory are going to take on Appiah Leichhardt.
How's Billy McColl going to shape up for this one? How's he going to shape up Appiah for this?
I suspect he'll have everybody on. Appiah are going to play their own football.
Well, they've lost Jordan Murray, which is a big loss.
That is a big blow. They've lost Jordan Murray to the Central Coast Mariners, but after the disappointment of losing the MPL New South Wales Minor Premiership on the final day of the season, they're going to go out there and want to prove something. And they've been an outstanding team in terms of their goal scoring. It's not just Jordan Murray. They've scored unbelievable hatful of goals this season in both Cup and League. They're one of the most exciting attacking teams going around. So I think Appiah will be a stern test for Melbourne Victory, who is still in pre-season. Kosuke Honda or no Kosuke Honda?
Definitely. And look, why don't we have a chat to Billy McColl next week, I reckon. I reckon we have to get in touch with him.
He's such a character. We've got to have him back on the show.
We definitely have. And we'll keep you up to date whether Billy will join us in the next few days leading up to the FFA Cup clash next Tuesday night. We also spoke to Morris Bassetto from the Western Melbourne Group. Lots to say about their fan forum. Seems like everything went smooth sailing and it was a great initiative for the people out in the west of Victoria.
Yes, we had an expansion flavour on today's show. Western Melbourne and Team 11, Matty Windley joining us to discuss their announcement to playing out of Casey Fields. And we're going to continue covering all of those expansion bids over the course of the next shows, Nick, whether it's South Melbourne, whether it's South West Sydney.
Whether we're going to Ipswich.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to go up and talk to all of these bids across Australia, Canberra as well, Wollongong, and make sure we cover every single one because it's an exciting time for Australian football and expansion in the A-League is what is absolutely needed to take the game forward.
And really, we don't leave any stone unturned when it comes to the local game here on Evenings on FNR. Tomorrow, we'll potentially be in touch with Robbie Crame.
Yeah, hoping to get in touch with the AAFC about Congress issues, Nick.
Yes, and obviously, look, it's a big talking point, the Congress, and as we heard what's happening over in Africa for nations that don't get their act together, they could face suspension. So look, Australia,
You
don't want to be in that boat. We don't want Australia being suspended from going to the Asian Cup or being suspended from World Cup qualifiers because that would be a huge dint. It's huge is probably a bit of an understatement for the Socceroos.
It would be
catastrophic.
Catastrophic is the word.
And look, you know what? In terms of the A-League expansion, the deadline's coming. It's getting really close now.
Is the Congress deadline.
They're both going to really coincide. So the FFA are going to have a busy couple weeks coming up. And there's a lot to talk about. Something new always coming up in the news. And we've got to be all over that, Josh.
And coming up tomorrow night will be the Pioneers. Georges Denikian and Koutsanis, G1 and G2. They're going to be interviewing an author, Ian Sison, who is an historian of Australian football, a real learned man. He's come out with a new book called The Game That Never Happened. Ian Sison will be on the show, The Pioneers, which airs from 7 p.m. tomorrow, 7 to 8 p.m., alongside George Denikian and George Koutsanis to talk all about his book, his role in Australian football, because the historians are important. If we're going to learn lessons from the game in the past, we need these guys around, and it's a book that's drawing a lot of interest from the football community. So Ian Sison will be in studio tomorrow night.
We need historians in any form of life, because in 100 years' time, some of this stuff will never obviously, you know, get to hear obviously some of these great stories from all those years ago. And it'll be a riveting listening from 7 p.m. tomorrow. But before that, obviously, join George Denikin and Athos Syrianos. You're getting a bit of a cheap little shout out to for the first hour of evenings on FNL, but I'll be looking at all the things, obviously, including potentially speaking to Robbie Crayon. But we also spoke to Mark Isles over from England, chief football writer for the Bolton Herald, and he was very, very, really optimistic about Adam Lafondra's move to Sydney FC. Very much, you know, exciting news for Sydney to get him over. And Chungi, Lee Chung-Yung, potentially coming to the A-League as well, as he called him. And them two coming into play down in on our shores would be two fantastic acquisitions.
It would be absolutely phenomenal to get both of them in. Lee Chung-Yung is an outstanding footballer who hasn't had the opportunities that he should have at Crystal Palace over the last few seasons. He's been released from his contract. He's a free agent. He can go where he likes. And one of those Asian Champions League teams in Australia, Melbourne Victory, seemed pretty full up in marquee spots. But
if you play, if you're a football manager, man, you'll be getting him in.
yes, like yourself. But Sydney or Newcastle could be interested, or even the City Group.
Definitely. Well, even any of the A-League clubs.
Really. Yeah.
Any of them. If do you think that he fits the Foxtel marquee fund?
I think he does, because you could reach a foreign market with the Korean influence.
Big Korean community in Australia.
He is a world-beating talent. I mean, he's good enough. Whether he has the profile, obviously Keisuke Honda is a much more famous player, but Lee Chung-Yung, probably on a similar level at this point in his career. He's a hell of a talent.
He really is.
And I think he deserves that marquee fund status.
Definitely, definitely. Well, Josh, we're getting towards the end of the program. Just leaving you with a bit of news coming straight out of Italy. Big news coming about a certain SMS, Sergej Milinkovic-Savic. Now, what I've heard is from my sources at the Gazzetta dello Sport is that Leonardo has prepared another offer to Lazio. Apparently, this is set to be accepted for a $40 million loan deal to join AC Milan with an $80 million obligation to buy. That would be huge.
You're dreaming.
I'm not dreaming. This is what the Gazzetta dello Sport is telling me. And if it does come through, Josh, I'll be back here on Friday night to make sure you hear about it.
You will be floating. I won't hear the end of it. The Milan fan in the room is a little deluded, but...
Never deluded. Optimist.
I'm going to let the afternoon's crew fact check that tomorrow,
definitely,
Nick.
Definitely.
Adriano Del Monte and co. will be on Facebook Live from midday in the studio from 1 p.m. to discuss all of the European transfer news. But until then, here on Evenings on FNR with me, Josh Parrish, and Nick DeBano, it's bye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.